interrupting current neo-Euclidean climate changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, and nuclear-glowing postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting, episode BTWRLM571. And right off the bat, we have to remind us all the time, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Don't let the folks get away with it. Don't even admit that there's anything to admit to until the authorita that's before you can prove the very fact. We don't have anything to do. It's all the duty on those that are making the claims. We've tried to make and appease people, thinking we can discuss things with them. I think that day's long gone. There's a weirdness in the world. I haven't figured it out. I wasn't wired for it. I'm just trying to barely keep up. Maybe not doing so well at that, but still we can persist and help, and hope we can help each other, those that we can, to move on. And one of these things that in this digital Siberian gulag they're setting up for us, the perpetual PSAs, I guess, warnings to us, keep your heads up. One of these programs is Telegram. I haven't been, again, just read the policies. If you read those services, I know they're dry, but read them. You almost see the future in them. See what's going on, see what's going to happen. And here's a PSA for you all. In Telegram, the new peer-to-peer login system could be a privacy nightmare. And these articles I read seem to soften some of the blow. When you read what's going on, they already are a privacy nightmare. They're also a control scheme of certain sorts, and people get onto them, and they find out pretty quickly at some point you're going to violate somebody's sensibilities, whether even if sensible or not. Telegram will now allow people to access its premium subscription tier for free if they agree to allow Telegram to use their phone numbers to send one-time passwords, OTPs, to other Telegram users. It said free, but you have an obligation. Telegram calls the service its peer-to-peer login and promises to only use any given number up to 150 times and sends users a passcode to log in to their accounts. But it gets worse. In addition to using a user's phone number to send the OTP, the company said that the recipients will see the sender's phone number. Telegram is in no way responsible for any harassment that may follow. On the policy, it states, accordingly, you understand, and some of you will say, and stand under, and agree that Telegram will not be liable for any inconvenience, harassment, or harm resulting from unwanted, unauthorized, or illegal actions undertaken by users who became aware of your phone number through P2PL, the company's terms of service read. On the policy, you can see that they're not, they're beheld harmless, and you're going to be feeling the brunt for free as well. Whatever the case, it could prove to be a privacy breakdown of epic proportions for those who sign up for the program. And as I see that epic browser, I looked at that for a bit. That didn't work too fast. They're not so good. For word to the wary on the epic browser, it wasn't so epic. On the other hand, here on all these nonsense telegrams out there, but then we have the governments. We even if these platforms weren't vulnerabilities all on their own, the all-seeing unpatched eye of Sauron is watching Trudeau's online speech monitoring. The government contracted a third-party tool to monitor speech. It's a public-private partnership again, but you almost see them using taxpayer money to do private work here within a government office. Although it's only now coming to light, Canadian press reports allege that Trudeau embarked on the policy of spending tax money in order to, quote, better surveil, close quote, the country's general population pretty much since he took office. In 2023, Meltwater went from earning several dozen a decade before to close to $50 million contract just in 2023. PCO blessed the deal, saying it was one focusing on communications professionals and media monitoring and relations. Quote, the Trudeau government is not paying millions of tax dollars to find out how it can save us money, but to learn how to build better propaganda. Apparently was also set up to become part of the disinformation and misinformation industry, though they say that's combating it. So, folks, can't you folks up in Kanukistan do yourselves a big favor and send this guy and his entourage to a small outcropping in the South China Sea, where he'll have all the meltwater he can drink. That would be nice. I hear you guys are going to have an election coming up, too. Folks, I know voting's kind of peculiar, but if there's any way to get at these folks, you got to get them out. They're not helping anybody. They're killing people. The digital killing field is being opened up on us. I hear from another techno-Nazi regime from one techno-Nazi regime to another, as I think about how these things are tied together. Israel using AI to pick targets in Gaza. The program is reportedly designed to detect Hamas operatives, but Israeli military sources say it often marks innocents for death. The AI system, known as Lavender, is designed to comb through the personal data of Gaza's 2 million residents to draw up lists of those suspected of serving in the military wings of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, six Israeli intelligence officers told the magazine. Again, we're back to suspicion, right? Pre-crime. The IDF has never publicly acknowledged the existence of the system, but has been known to use similar software during previous operations in Gaza. Lavender works by studying phone records, social media activity, photographs, and movements of known Palestinian militants, identifying common characteristics, and then searching for those characteristics among the wider population of Gaza. The system gives each Gazan a score of between 0 and 100, with those ranked near 100 deemed to be terrorists and therefore legitimate targets. Remember, even the children were not innocent here. Well, let's take a step back and look at how they do this and what they explain here. Social credit culling score, maybe to identify all you sustainable terrorists, folks, in the future, as we see this working through. Apply this technology. Remember, we talked about this little organization with all of its software and all of its intrusions being bought up by governments to surveil us. Now we're seeing that they're actually making scores. There's nothing much beyond that in my mind to make it very difficult to attach that to your credit score and then mark you as a terrorist, you heretic. Once marked for assassination, low-level targets would be taken out in their homes, identified using a different AI system called Gospel. If you don't think there's religious undertones to all this, at 5 a.m., the Air Force would come and bomb all the houses that we have marked, a source said. We took out thousands of people. We didn't go through them one by one. We put everything into an automatic system, and as soon as one of the marked individuals was at home, he immediately became a target. We bombed him and his house. When a suspect is chosen and the assassination order given, IDF commanders decide how many civilian casualties they deem acceptable to take out the target. Quote, it's not just that you can kill any person who is a Hamas soldier, which is clearly permitted and legitimate in terms of international law, they said, but they directly tell you, you are allowed to kill them along with many civilians. But if you understood what I've been saying or read it for yourself under international law, but that is incorrect, that the belligerent occupier has no right, and no right of genocide aside, they have no right of self-defense to be doing any of this. So they don't have any of the rights that they're claiming on any of this. So doesn't this, so though, you step back again and look at what they can apply this to, doesn't this sound just like a geofencing and the two-minute city I've called relative to your phone, that everyone having that cell phone already lives in with the help of ad tech and be evil Googles of the world and other platforms. We've discussed this pretty much on and on. It's going on. And these are all the of the worlders that are looking at this and being caught. So what you don't want to be is an of the worlder. Don't be of the world. We're told that. Don't be of the world. You can be in it, but don't be of it. This is where we get part of the idea. You better have an alternative in lots of different areas. You start applying this, you start realizing we think in terms of bombs and things, but they're talking in terms of cell phone connectivity and geofencing and associating with different devices and proximity. And you've heard, I've read the stories about the governments are already using, governments all over the world are using this proximity to track down people. Again, all of presumptions. you're associated just by the fact you may have walked by somebody. So some, if you look at this, Gaza genocide plan to be exported to the rest of the world to perform on population control, both behaviorally or non-existence, would be a logical extension. But in this article, you see this Zionist denial is really interesting. As we read through, the IDF said that the Wednesday that it does not use an artificial intelligence system that identifies terrorist operatives or tries to predict whether a person is a terrorist, and it outright rejects the claim regarding any policy to kill tens of thousands of people in their homes, which they're doing. We should note here indiscriminate bombing of all the Palestinians and aid workers, if we've heard this last week, would be the same answer provided by an AI. Remember, AI is error prone. And it would come up with the same answer as these folks saying they don't use AI at all. The same error prone AI that requires people to verify, then further test, then confirm legitimacy before attempting using the garbage in, garbage out system. They deny using it, yet their output is the same as if it was put into an AI system. So the Zionists then admit with their unaided, indiscriminate death and wanton destruction of Palestine and all the people there, such as the aid workers recently, to be less capable than a pre-programmed machine. Less capable of making proper decisions and incapable of confirming legitimate use to proper action. In effect, with the admission that AI isn't aiding, the Zionists admit to being imbeciles, ignoramuses, Nimroids, even proclaiming to be the chosen ultramaroons at that. And if that isn't stupid enough, how intelligent is the rest of the nations, those of the worlders, to recognize such Taragunde political movement and hand them the bomb? Or is this an all not as it seems? In other words, what are you watching unfold in this whole issue? It may be the plan for you and any future generations, the chosen have chosen to serve them in the global open-air prison and Siberian panopticonocratic culling system that they're setting up for us, it seems. And we can't seem to get away from that as a real probability. And the Zionist AI overlords are flexing their panopticonocratic psychopathy on those in the world. Just watch. Tick-tock. And the disinformation, misinformation racket doesn't begin and end with the government privatized destruction special interest meddling. We can read that Facebook fact-checker RMIT accused of misconduct, criticized for spreading misinformation about energy. And this will be across, these are just little highlights of what's out there to read on the totality of the deception and the field agents that are in there, whether they're in the governments or whether they're working with the governments or they're working for their own little part in this. I don't even know. It's just a gulag. It's just a prison. If you look at it from a commerce standpoint, it's just ways to make funds to keep stockholders and stakeholders happy. But fact checkers, so-called, quotes, in quotes, fact checkers, hold power over what gets suppressed on the platform, but they're often caught making false statements. And I'm bringing this up not that we don't know. Anybody that would listen to me would know all this. You've done enough research. It's that it's there. It's being admitted to. It's being found. This is the system that's being set up, the digital system that's prone on the side of the they to be error-prone. And they're exporting that over to AI, which turns out to be no different than if they don't use AI. It's still wrong. So understand the deception that sets up, the fog that sets up that, the cover that starts to obscure. The RMIT ABC Fact Check, a collaboration between RMIT University and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, is continuing to lose whatever credibility it had left after a series of previous scandals. And I've told you in America, the university system is a part and integral with all this. And here they have it in Australia the same way. There's the admission right there in the news. If I didn't know it before, I do clearly see it right now. And this case, once again, sheds negative light on the phenomenon that is the fact-checking industry one of the byproducts of the censorship and information control that dominated the media over the past years. The latest scandal saw businessman Dick Smith directly accusing RMIT of being an actual spreader of misinformation and lies after the group came out with its fact check, in quotes, of his remarks related to nuclear and renewable energy. And despite RMIT at first attempting to stick to its guns, maintaining that its assertions were accurate, Smith yesterday received an apology from the ABC, which also had to correct its original report, which is now described as riddled with errors thanks to RMIT's fact-checking. Quote, they, RMIT, say on the document, this is your inoculation against misinformation, and their document is just completely misinformation because the left at the ABC have to be against nuclear, so they just make up every lie they can to distort everyone, anyone who says we have to move to nuclear, he added. So take note, folks, of what's going on, what's going down. It would seem everything is a misinformation campaign. Don't forget, I hope you're not, the war, the cognitive warfare campaign that's ongoing by the military. It's not separate on all of this, as I've shown you over the years, over and over. So integrated, I can predict Operation Hindsight 2020 and the approach of the great Covey swindle and the follow-through, and also show and explain what you might do to protect yourself. And those that did, and most of everybody didn't. And as the week goes on, just in time this week, as I've been bringing up this Assange issue, it's such an abhorrent condition for all of us that I'm going to pull up on a report that came up, and I'm going to expand on that to show us, again, in our own country, United States of America, we think it's a beacon of freedom, and I know lots of people will laugh to listen to me, but this is the point about propaganda. This is the point about ad campaigns, mind control, and all that other stuff. Why it seems that most everybody failed in the Covey swindle. The great Covey swindle was a big test. There's no way for me to look at this now after 4 years even and say it wasn't. And the people everywhere failed generally. We're just now coming back to discuss the carnage and those people that, a lot of people that got involved, that got duped, are the loudest and most vociferous, but they won't respond to the truth. But nobody had to really go and get involved with that. They didn't. There was a check and balance for all of that, that no people, most everybody, did not even engage. And one of the problems with that is even if you weren't going to engage, your engagement would have been an example on how others didn't have to. As part of an engagement, as part of here, engaging in the counter-propaganda tactics and related work behind the woodshed, congressionally authorized, no less, I've talked to you about this, combating the disinformation and misinformation of government, continuing on the expose of the U.S. system of Just Us, using the Assange case as it exposes the inhumane Just Us victimization system to the Americans' trust for some reason, I don't know. We read, worse and worse, abuse of U.S. prison systems and Assange's denial of due process. And this discussion was very straight up, and I thought I would want to expose it to people. And I don't say that you can't do this on your own. Certainly you can. But it seemed to be a most recent discussion. Someone on the inside, in the system, a whistleblower, has started to look at our prison system. And they want to complain outside and find that the prison system is inhumane in the United States. It is. And this story will start to tell you. You can get your line items up on how. And I'm not sure where you might take it. I do know that, again, no different than Assange, if they can't find a humane system to put you in, that would be a defense in your last statement that you have the right to. The name of it always escapes me, and I don't know why. But anyway, do you have when they ask you, when you are being about to be sentenced and they ask, do you have something to say? This is when you say this stuff. It's a mitigation of the sentence. Worse and worse here, abuse of U.S. prison system. The High Court of England and Wales has ruled that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange may get a final appeal against extradition to the United States, but only if particular conditions are met. His freedom of speech might be restricted in the U.S., and there is a possibility he could receive a death penalty. The U.S. must provide assurances that neither of these instances will happen, and therefore the trial can move to another phase where Assange's legal team may debate the validity of those assurances. If they do not, then the limited appeal will move forward. One journalist noted that this will continue to obstruct Assange's due process and therefore his most basic legal rights, which has been going on for more than a decade. And I've told you that. As soon as you have rights that are violated, it's irreparable harm right there. You're violated right up front, and that system didn't stop it. Cannot be a good look for the system that you now see for 10 years doesn't really care. I say this stuff not to break new ground. I want people to understand this is very important things to keep in their mind on what they're going to discuss and how they're going to discuss to people, what they're looking for proof for themselves, even if they can't convince anybody. You saw 80% of the population fall on its face. We saw down through time 10 more percent failed. There's only about 10% of the people you might get to talk to. In the meantime, you have to protect yourself, each one of you. John Kiriakou is a former CIA counterterrorism officer and a former senior investigator with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He became the sixth whistleblower indicted by the Obama administration under the Espionage Act and served 23 months in prison as well as a result of his attempt to oppose the Bush administration's torture program. Kiriakou recently wrote in an article, quote, Assange and the Sickness of U.S. Prisons, that the U.S. prison medical system is utterly broken, and described a prisoner he personally knew who was given Tylenol for stage 4 cancer in his spine who would later die in prison. Kiriakou sat down with the Critical Hour on Thursday to discuss Assange's predicament. Quote, people forget Julian Assange spent so many years in what amounted to solitary confinement in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, and so you tend to go crazy, not having access to the outside world. There's almost nothing you can do about it. Now we know from a multitude of studies that have been done in prison systems here in the United States, both at the federal and state levels, that 85% of the incarcerated people in the United States have some form of diagnosable mental illness. I thought about that. 80% of the people in America on Comey swindle have a mental illness, it seemed to me. So maybe that number is consistent with society. However, not to move the point here, it does affect you being incarcerated. He goes on to say, even if they didn't go into prison with mental illness, they develop it in prison, and it's because of solitary confinement. It's because of the lack of mental health care and physical health care. It's because of being heaped into overcrowded, in many cases, dorm rooms of overcrowded cells. Many of us who have been to prison were fortunate in that we essentially escaped unscathed because our sentences were so short. But Julian Assange is facing 175 years in prison, so there's no upside to this. Wilmer Leon from Sputnik noted that while in prison, a prisoner does not only have to fear harm from their few cellmates, but they also are subjected to trauma inflicted by prison guards. That's right, says Kiriakou. In many cases, guards are worse. There's a case in California right now at the federal level. It's a Federal Bureau of Prisons women prison called FCI Dublin in Dublin, California. And that prison was known as the Rape Club. So far, 6 officials at the prison, including the warden, the prison doctor, 3 guards, and the chaplain, if you can imagine this, raped dozens of female prisoners, would beat them if they would not submit to the rape and are just now working their way through the legal system. This kind of things happens all the time, because who's going to believe you? It's your word against the guard, and you're a criminal. So if the guard says you shoved him, and he had to beat you unconscious to protect himself, they're going to believe the guard and you're going to end up in a solitary confinement, even though you were the one who was attacked. And it gets worse than that, Kiriakou adds. This is the kind of system that Julian Assange is going to find himself in. And this isn't even new news from him. We've already heard the British courts have already found it. The United States system is inhumane. Well, how this is going and continuing beyond that, I don't understand. Except we do understand. It's simply politics. There's just us, not just this. Wilmer Leon noted that there has been a dramatic shift in the philosophy of incarceration in the U.S., which can mostly likely be attributed to the mid to late 1970s, as well as the war on drugs. Now listen very carefully on this shift and what it was consistent with. First, inaugurated by President Richard Nixon in the early 1970s, which shifted the philosophy from rehabilitation model to an incarceration model. So true, Kiriaki agreed. You know, things began to change in the late 70s. They changed very much in the mid-1980s. I'm interject here. Remember, in the 71 is when they moved from the gold standard. And then they invented this fallacious and fraudulent war on drugs. It was really the war, government war of drugs, as we have heard since then, and what the CIA does in countries to infiltrate other countries, and the drugs and heroin and things that go through that pays for the system that destroys countries that way. But this is, again, the war of terror. They call it the war on terror. This is the war on drugs. It's really war of drugs against people. They go, but you're exactly right. Before the Reagan presidency, if you were incarcerated, you could learn a skill. Listen very carefully how they adjusted this here, folks. You could get your GED. If you didn't have a high school diploma, then you could learn small engine repair, plumbing, electrical work, any number of different things. Now you can't do that. You can still get a GED in class taught by another prisoner, but you can't learn a skill. And then we wonder why our recidivism rate is almost 50% when the recidivism rates of Western Europe's are under 20%, referring to the legal term for a prisoner's relapse into criminal behavior. Where they do teach you a skill, where they do give you medical care and mental health care in Europe, they don't do it in the United States, and this is, causes a different type of breakdown. Instead of overstuffing people in bleak prison cells, they put them in what looked like apartments in Europe so that they can transition back into normal society when their prison sentences are up. We just don't understand that. Leon noted that the rehabilitating criminals has been abolished and that prisons have now come under an aspect of privatization. So we get right back to the public-private partnershiping, and they did that into the prison systems. Furniture making is a good example, Kiriaku explained. At the prison where I was incarcerated, FCR Laredo in central Pennsylvania, there was a prison industry factory where they manufactured fiber optic cables for the U.S. Navy. Well, when you're paying people 25 cents an hour and forcing them to work 40 hours a week for that quarter an hour and putting outside businesses out of business because they can't pay their workers 25 cents an hour, you know, you're actually doing damage to the community. So let's take a step moment back and look. These, again, as I said, are public-private partnerships. And as I've been showing you prior, as we can see at the 42 U.S.C. 1981 equal rights under law, where pains and punishments are equal, or civil rights under C, if you look at the subcode of that, non-governmental organizations, i.e. private sector, cannot impair these rights to pain and punishment. You'll start to maybe get a better understanding what's being talked about here. We continue to read, though, back in the story here, the narrative of what's going on. I think anybody who's ever been in touch around the prison system or even the jails sees all this, so it's not even hard to rationalize if you didn't even have a clue. And then he says, because you're paying your workers 25 cents an hour, there's no pride in their work because they consider it to be slavery. Remember that? Hang that little back. We're going to go back to this in a little bit here. Slavery, which I do too. Then they produce substandard fiber optics cable. And as it turns out, 40% of the cable that they're making for the U.S. Navy is not usable. It's just junk. It's scrap. And again, you put people in the community outside the prison out of work by undercutting them with the slave labor that you've created in the prisons that you're using. It's just simply not fair. It's not right. But it is the Lincolnized America, if you start looking carefully here. It's not right, folks, but it's the law. Now read 42 U.S.C. 1981, the title of it. Equal rights under the law. Pains and punishment for extortions of any kind. Keep that slavery word going here. We'll pick that up in a second. It just gets worse and worse and worse, said Kiriakou. And again, we find ourselves just shocked that we have these problems. And so the idea is, if these prisoners do their sentences and then they become repeat offenders and the recidivism rates are high, then that must mean that our sentences aren't long enough. And in fact, our sentences are the longest of any industrialized country. And I wrote a separate piece not long ago saying that in the last 10 years, Congress has created 500 new crimes, not 500 new laws, 500 new crimes. Things that were perfectly legal 10 years ago that are now felonies, he added. And so the bottom line is that they want to get you, they're going to get you. Now, we've heard about all this as well, but 500 new crimes and felonies, what do they do there? Your felonies take away a lot of your other so-called civil liberties as well. Your right to bear arms, your voting rights and all this, unless you get a process going to get return them. The open-air American prison of the kinder and gentler voluntary servitude pains and penalties equally is what we're seeing. And so you think these are your wealthy representatives in Congress that are thinking about you and representative you? No. So that's the whole point. These guys are told about what they're going to go, what hedge fund they're going to do, what industries they need to promote, what more laws they need to make that beefed up. And it certainly can't be said to be a representative of the people. It can be said to be a representative of commerce, can it? Just what this place was wired to do and promote in the Treaty of Peace to the Crown. So you think this is an inhumane treatment question about Julian Assange? No, it's not. It's about you, folks, too. All this discussion is about my listener. I've been explaining and showing this stuff for years of how it comes down. Let's go back into that slavery question. And remember, where does that come from? If you can, fine, I appreciate that you have that. If you haven't heard about it, it's how they twisted what the 13th Amendment was. So let's review a little bit of that 13th Amendment in the United States, simply going to the wiki. The 13th Amendment, Amendment 13 to the United States Constitution, abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, except, folks. This is what blew Clint Richardson away about his studying when I pointed him to Title 50. I said, look for the exceptions. They can't do something except. The same thing. Abolish slavery and involuntary servitude except as punishment for crime. What's your civil right? Title 42, Section 1981. It's your civil right. It's your equal right to punishment for a crime. The amendment was passed by the Senate on April 8, 1864, by the House of Representatives on July 31st, 1865. And ratified by the required 27 and then the 36 states in December 6th of 1865 and proclaimed it December 18th. It was the first of the three Reconstruction Amendments adopted following the Civil War in now the Lincolnized America, as I keep pointing out. So here is your first notice of the Lincolnized United States providing the slaver's prison system. Abolished slavery and involuntary servitude except as punishment for a crime. And you wonder why Congress keeps making crimes. It's because of this amendment. Then the judicial branch gave lip service to the presumption of innocence, allowed extortionate and coercive plea deals on top of that, as we can hear all the time, and providing incentives to accept the plea deal, as you hear, through harsher treatment if one insists on their innocence. Now reduced to not guilty, as we see Julian Assange is being punished. As if to say, how dare you offend us? Right, Greta? How dare you? So then, if all that corruption to gain voluntary servitude, the plea deal, and the threat of going through harsher penalties if you force the system, the legalized public benefit, slavery replacing private, wasn't bad enough, then we have presumed upon us 9/11 after that, through the PATRT Act that everyone is a criminal. Remember that one? That brought everybody in. They didn't have to make 500 new laws. And then we see, as we go move through, applying the same coercive lip service to lawful due process of the captured, presumed guilty population, because the business of running an open-air public slave system is so good, folks. It's flat profitable. We don't need no stinking rehabilitation in the slave prison system. They claim to be, it's supposed to be not involuntary or slavery existent, except, folks. Now, especially after eliminating the gold standard, exalting that fiat system as well. There's no way to buy yourself out either. Well, short of a prison break, I suppose, right? And this is where you start to see what the dynamic might have to be. And like I said, if we're a bunch of people that are scared of our own shadow, 80% of our population, the right to abolish and whatever all that alter is not probably not on the table for us for quite a while. And again, you're all presumed guilty anyway. You're all criminals. So there, how you like that? So let's go back to what Kiriakou was referencing. What prison system, as those comments were upon as the federales turned their attention to the post-founding father era, the Lincolnized corrupted due process, not involuntary, more perfect union slave system that went from prison as punishment to prison for punishment. What Kiriakou reflects, a lot of people don't understand a long time back, and maybe not so long ago, you aren't supposed to go to prison for punishment. It was as punishment. A subtle difference. You want to know about simple little two-letter words, how big a deal they are? Yeah. This is one of them. But listen here for the admissions of systemic abuse and inhumane treatment that Assange has a right to be fearful of, and a judicially focused UK court intending justice would be appalled at here, and sufficiently to already know it cannot allow the extradition of Assange. When I read this next story, think about this, what's going on here, and that it would create the appearance of impropriety in aiding and abetting inhumane U.S. prison conditions with a political lapdog instrumentality, which that instrumentality would allow if it was a political lapdog. And we're watching it. 10 years. I don't even know what more to say of how indecent that justice system is. But we read this story here. Seventh guard sentenced for sexually abusing inmates at California's rape club prison. Even in a federal system known for chronic sexual abuse, the Alameda County facility stands out. Can I read that again so we understand it is the federal system, not just one prison? Even in a federal system known for its chronic sexual abuse, the Alameda County facility stands out. That's not the only abuse, as we heard Kiriakou discuss. A former corrections officer at the federal women's prison in Alameda County was sentenced to 72 months in prison for sexually abusing 5 inmates, the United States Department of Justice, they call it, announced Wednesday. The low-security federal corrections facility in Dublin, California, has been plagued by scandal following a string of lawsuits and federal investigations alleging a toxic culture of sexual abuse and retaliation by correctional officers at all levels. Sounds just like some kind of the plague needs a vaccine. Toxic culture sounds like the jabs, doesn't it? All just running, all the same in every subject matter. Nakee Nunley, 48, is the 8th staff member to be charged and the 7th to be sentenced so far in connection with a sweeping federal probe that has also put a former warden and a chaplain behind bars for similar crimes. In addition to the 5 victims, he admitted to sexually abusing, Nunley described, engaging in sexual acts with 2 other inmates and lying to investigators in his plea agreement. Dubbed the rape prison, the California facility is notorious even within the scandal-plagued federal system. The Justice Department estimates Bureau of Prisons employees sexually abuse female prisoners in at least 2/3 of federal prisons from 2002 2022. Last year, abuse survivors at FCI filed a class action lawsuit against the guards and officials, alleging abuse continued even after earlier charges were filed. The lawsuit pointed to the systemic nature of the abuse, implicating the entire Bureau of Prisons system in which, quote, officers at every level literally watched as other officers assaulted incarcerated people and helped to keep survivors silent through retaliation. A lawyer representing the 8 clients in this class action suit told local media earlier this month a U.S. district judge issued a scathing order calling the prison a dysfunctional mess and appointed a special master to implement reforms. While Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers highlighted the need for increased oversight and continuing reform, she concluded allegations that, quote, sexualized environment persists today at FCI Dublin are exaggerated with most misconduct dating to Garcia's tenure, but also dismissed the government's assertion that it had eradicated the issue. The truth is somewhere in the middle, she wrote, pointing to the ongoing retaliation against inmates as evidence that BOP, quote, has lost the ability to manage with integrity and trust. A judge saying the Bureau of Prisons, the entire federal Bureau of Prisons has lost the ability to manage with integrity and trust. The UK court should have taken judicial notice. Lost integrity and trust. What assurances can such a system give, folks? In the Assange question. It's done. Stick a fork in it a couple times now and prove it. The judge's order came just days after the FBI raided the prison and the BOP ousted former warden Art Duglove amid allegations that his staff had retaliated against an inmate who testified in the class action lawsuit. Duglove is the third warden to cycle through since Garcia's conviction. This is a national problem. In 2022, the Department of Homeland Security's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations held a hearing on sexual abuse in female inmates in federal prison systems. Let me point out something right there. What did I say? This starts out at the PATRT Act in 2001, after the so-called War of Terror, it becomes the War of Terror against us, where everybody's deemed to be a criminal. Why is the Department of Homeland Security looking at this? Unless that's the fact. This is the continuity of government. It's already on the job and doesn't stop a thing. Systemic here, folks. Bipartisan staff who reviewed non-public BOP and whistleblower documents, as well as interviews with more than 24 senior BOP leaders, whistleblowers, and survivors, said the evidence led to deeply disturbing conclusions. In my view, said subcommittee chair Senator John Ossoff in a statement, the BOP is failing systematically to prevent, detect, and address sexual abuse of prisoners by its own employees. I need to add here a little bit. They're focusing on sexual. There was other abuses, all ongoing here. According to the Justice Department, there were 2,496 substantiated victims of staff-on-inmate sexual victimization in adult correction facilities from 2016 to 2018, the latest period for which the data is available. In 2018, there were 27,826 allegations of sexual victimization, and 14% increase from 2015. Inside California's state prison system, where data is more readily available, overall reported PREA violations rose more than 60% from 2022 to 2023, which specifically staff on inmate sexual misconduct and sexual harassment allegations increased from 2021 to 2022 by 21% and 39% respectively. Didn't sound like, maybe that's where the Kobe swindle was. Didn't exist, and it was a real thing, and all those prisoners were getting infected, right? We didn't hear anything about it, or they weren't infected. So another proof inside of that, during the Great Kobe Swindle, they weren't having such an outbreak, are they? But who would know? The medical system is broken in the prisons anyway, right? And they were throwing people out because of that. What a racket, anyway. Too frequent, but what, to do what? Like, that was the first wave of illegal immigrants into our country, was letting prisoners with the murderers, let them out because of Kobe swindle. Now they replace that with the immigrants coming in from whomever, wherever. Too frequently in our investigations have identified BOP staff using contraband, including cell phones, cigarettes, and drugs, to groom and develop relationships with inmates and subsequently assault them, Horowitz said. Previous recommendations to strengthen staff search policy to deter contraband, he said, remain open and unimplemented. So this is a national problem, as you'll read, as you hear, repeatedly stated. So what assurances can be given by the attorneys that are saying that they're assuring that Assange will be treated fairly? So what we're seeing, these prosecutors are only trying to curtail this national embarrassment at this one facility, if you hear, listen carefully between the lines there. This embarrassment, I think, as I've said before, is the only thing which seems to get any attention when living in a country that gives lip service to faithful compliance of limited form government. That was transformed by old Abe Lincolnization in an open-air American gulag. The more perfect slaver's union of civil rights, pains and punishments, extortions called exactions under law, under color of voluntary conviction and penal commitment. Welcome to the land oppressed by equal rights. Well, almost, it sounds like, from the story, there are 30% of the prison population yet to enjoy such abuse equally. In a system, the judge says, contrary to the government abusers' attorneys' assurance of eradication, that the truth is somewhere in the middle, she wrote, pointing to ongoing retaliation against inmates as evidence. It's a national problem, folks, and the judge allows it to continue, likely taking silent judicial notice against the abuser's misrepresentations, that she cannot expect any assurance, nor does the judiciary maintain any power to stop the systemic abusers in Lincolnized America post-terror state. Are the representatives of Julian Assange listening here? What about the UK courts? How about you, folks? Just down the road from that prison, preparing for more justice abuse systems, Oakland installing 480 cameras joining nationwide mass surveillance system. The California City of Oakland has approved a plan to install 480 surveillance cameras equipped with automatic license plate readers in an effort to fight rising crime in the city. Most of the cameras, 290, will be deployed inside the city, while the remaining 180 will be placed on freeways. The cameras will provide law enforcement with the ability to track vehicles as they drive around the area and can track them using license plates, car types, color, decals, and bumper stickers. The plan, part of a multi-million dollar contract with private surveillance company Flock Safety, and the flock safety vote, the herd, the flocking herd. And the California Highway Patrol has approved by the Oregon Privacy Advisory Commission in October. It was a reversal from the commission, which advised in 2019 that the city terminate any automatic license plate readers, as I read behind the woodshed. It looked like it was a pretty cool thing, but you see, the next vote, the next election cycle, it can change in a heartbeat, and it does. These folks are there, and these agents are there, everywhere, and they don't give up. And that's the weakness of this voter system that we have in America, even though it can be a strength. That's why I turned my attention to property rights, as best I could identify those savings clauses and attempt to find some distance, where you at least have a way to say, but I'm doing this, and you're fraudulently telling people I'm doing that, and that's at least that's extortion, felony extortion, that's felony coercion. It's also defamation. And you have a little bit different statement in your mouth against these types of incursions and transformations. Going Flock Safety, you heard, is a Georgia-based private company that advertises its goals on creating a nationwide surveillance network. One of its features is the ability to add your cameras to their network, making it easily accessible, Vince, easily accessible, for law enforcement nationwide. The American Civil Liberties Union described the flock system as blanketing American cities with dangerously powerful and unregulated automatic license plate recognition cameras that are becoming the first nationwide mass surveillance system using its customers' cameras, including those owned by homeowners and the businesses who opt in. Let me say, these cameras, these so-called traffic cameras, are just a boon for the revenue enhancement and the revenuers in those locales as well. Again, commerce. Everybody's learned how to make money from you. You were supposed to be free of all this. Well, until Lincoln got a hold and made the more perfect this union coming on with these digital currencies and social credit as well in this the digital cyber Siberian gulag. The ACLU also warned that it could be used to investigate crimes across state lines, such as in immigration or abortion cases. It could also be used to monitor the movement of political activists or track who goes to certain religious services. It is unclear if the increased surveillance will actually reduce crime. Of the 10 most surveilled cities, judged by the number of cameras per 1,000 people, 5 of them, the municipality of Washington, D.C., no less here, Title 42 U.S.C. 1981, that's the municipal law of Washington, D.C., for all your equal rights across the nation. Of the 5 of them, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Albuquerque, Detroit, and Memphis are among the top 35 most dangerous cities in America, including 2 in the top 5, Memphis and Detroit. And we've heard this over and over again, that surveillance isn't for crime. It's really just for revenue enhancement and making more victims of the just us system. And then move into an extension of that. And despite, as we read, ivermectin being the first of one valid treatment option in every city, the justice abuse system in New York just made it legal to quarantine and isolate citizens indefinitely. The New York appellate court has just upheld Governor Kathy Hochul and the state's appeal that the government should have the authority to isolate and or quarantine anyone with a highly contagious disease. Regulation 10 NYCRR 2.13 established isolation and quarantine procedures for people that were suspected of having communicable disease. The state will now be able to instruct the Department of Health to, quote, pick and choose which New Yorkers they can lock up or lock down without any proof that they are sick and without any proof that you've been exposed to a communicable disease, according to attorney Debbie Ann Cox. And it gets worse. There is no time limit, so they can lock you up or lock you down for days or weeks. There is no location restrictions. They can put you in any facility they want. They can either lock you down in their house, or they can remove you from their house with the force of a police and put you in a facility, detention center, that they choose. You would have no say. Remember, it's an inhumane, nationwide inhumane system. And this is how they're treating the herd, and the flock will help. Oh, and that wasn't enough. There's no procedure in how you actually get out of quarantine once you get there, which is why the original New York Justice Plotz ruled that the, quote, involuntary detention is a severe deprivation of individual liberty, far more egregious than other health and safety measures, and was a violation of the constitutional due process. Instead of fighting for the people, Attorney General Letitia James argued that the plaintiffs lacked standing. Let's go back to that. Your individual liberty, that was circumvented by the Lincolnization of your equal rights, wasn't it? So you don't have constitutional due process. You have the due process New York gave as they're extorting from you, taking those exactions. So let's go back here quickly and review that concern that there is no procedure. If you listen behind the woodshed, you know there is. Your mind should have tripped a little bit there. I hope it did. And also showing here that the bar members are complicit in allowing such an unchecked power as unilaterally unlimited quarantine. The procedural protections are in the local communicable disease law. They do provide for quarantine, but they provide for other duties and obligations to go forward first. And they're not without due process protections. So remember, one can challenge the restraint of liberty with a habeas corpus action, as you read in Portugal. The doctor has the exclusive authority, and every duty and obligation of the local communicable disease law must be followed, or the restraint of liberty, such as the quarantine, is unlawful, or if other treatments are available. And it's patient's choice. Remember, that's why I said, go read those communicable disease laws. Really spelled out there. We're just watching the justice, exaction, extortion system working here, and all of its, the Bar of Association members are seemingly helpless to tell us how bad it's going to be. And you didn't hear anything talk about, well, but there are these safety due process provisions in the habeas corpus procedure, which is a constitutional recognition, constitutionally recognized remedy for the unwarranted restraint of liberty. So the duties that are inside that communicable disease law to non-fraudulently demonstrate the existence of an infectious agent carried by the non-fraudulently demonstrated infectious patient, not just that it's suspected. Remember, that's the next step they were supposed to. After a report of suspicion of communicable disease is reported by the doctor, before any quarantine or other treatment can be available. I wanted everyone to read this. And this is what why Portugal's case was so important. They explained that the doctor has the exclusive jurisdiction of care. They said the doctor has to suspect. They have to file a report. The government just can't take this without that report. And then it has to go through the process of non-fraudulent confirmation. And then it comes back and says, here's your options. They can't dictate that option. As we heard, the FDA, the CDC, cannot dictate. They can only advise, and it's irrelevant and without force and effect in law. The doctor will be looking at this. And once they have it identified, there's no treatment to be given. And if they have it non-fraudulently identified infectious agent, what are they treating for becomes the restraint of liberty, the unwarranted force of your liberty that they don't have, there's no written power in the law for it, even if they have the police power there. And even if found infections, but the treatment is not just limited to quarantine, but might include something like ivermectin as well. And as an aside, now that it has been found that ivermectin could be prescribed by a doctor, then the jabs lose their authorization. Folks, remember, kick it back. See how bad this went. I told you, I was telling you all this at the time. As soon as it, now we see that ivermectin could not be taken off the table by the CDC, the FDA, the WHO, the jabs could not be authorized at all. Think about that. Think about the absolute corruption of the government. Top to bottom. Talk about the prison system. This is top to bottom, state to federal. While killing the people they claim to represent, all these officials. But never forget who one of the main culprits are, the usurpers, the House delegates. Resolution of the Bar Association occupied courts is on record, as I have read, to promote sustainable development, including population control, to transform your society, of which the great Comey swindle was to begin that great reset. So great. Look around you. It did. Absolutely is working. And a Bar Association court judge just agreed to continue that transformation despite every law to the contrary. So this is a highly consistent with, it's not just in the prisons. This abuse is systemic, governmental, federal, mental, I guess, heavy on the mental. Federal and state, as I've been pointing out. The Comey swindle is still, no one picked it up, but it is still the greatest example of what the people should have done and could probably still do. And what we can gear up for, as we now see, this is all where they're going. These are the controllers. And there's no law that they follow anymore. It really is in that reflexive condition. They hit you in the knee and your knee kicks out. Well, that's a crime. So, anyway, it's pretty disappointing. As I said, the 80% of the population is a mental case right now and getting worse. And so there's only going to be a few of us that are going to be the witnesses of this. And that's why I said, I've learned not to judge people. They did what they did. Fear, they got people afeared, and that's how people ran. And so it's not about expecting them to apologize or whatever they were doing out of that fear. We need to have more compassion in how we're going to deal with it, because those folks are still afeared and afearable. You know, we saw they live amongst us. But watching here, as we look forward and watching down as this goes, watching the signposts of where this Just Us abuse system leads us, this next news notice seems very apropos. I'll be reading the highlights, but the article offers a historical references for comparison and consideration as we hear the freight train a-coming around the bend in this unwholesome financial prison we find ourselves since I don't know when, but we are agreeing to it. The death of empires. History tells us what will follow the collapse of U.S. hegemony. So I've been asking people to watch what they're seeing, look at these notices, and they call it the news, project them out, and you'll be able to hopefully position yourself better as we read the turn away from expansion, production, and trade toward lending and speculation has precipitated decline for centuries. It is a historical look, and it's just what I was telling you, just for my part, why I saw production was all important. This author actually brings that up, that this distinction in the production and trade become the paramount points of a healthy society, which is attacked, that at least I know production can be protected, and that's the law of your land, and that's how I've been going at this. I don't know if I can hold down the trade, because that's commerce, but I can certainly hold down we the people and our land. With you. I mean, you're going to have to do it. It's your land, too, that you have it. So let's go read here about this historic context and where are we going as a country if we watch this whole thing just collapsing predictably as well, given it went fiat and given the history of banks and debasing of money, so-called, when it wasn't really money, but it was this fiat nonsense. They did it to all of our coins, I think, except the nickel. They've debased all of it. It's not what, you know, I think pennies are now made with plastic and coatings and zinc or whatever. But anyway, moving here. The turn away from expansion, production, and trade toward lending and speculation has precipitated decline for centuries. So if such a phenomenon is overwhelmingly viewed negatively but isn't being amended, then perhaps it's not merely a failure of policymaking, but rather something deeper, something more endemic to the very fabric of the capitalist society. An examination of history reveals recurrent instances of financialization, which bears remarkable similarities, which invites the conclusion that perhaps the predicament in the American economy in recent decades is not unique in what the overrising power of Wall Street was. In a sense, it was preordained. It is in this context that it pays to revisit the work of Italian political economist and historian of global capitalism, Giovanni Arrighi, he was alive up until 2019, born 1937. Arrighi, who is often simplistically pigeonholed as a Marxist historian, a label far too constricting given the breadth of his work, explored the origins and evolution of capitalistic systems dating back to the Renaissance and showed how recurrent phases of financial expansion and collapse underpin broader geopolitical reconfigurations. Occupying a central place in his theory is the notion that the cycle of rise and fall of each successive hegemon terminates in a crisis of financialization. It is this phase of financialization that facilitates the shift to the next hegemon. Arrighi dates the origins of his cyclic process to the Italian city-states of the 14th century, an era that he calls the birth of the modern world. From the marriage of Genoese capital and Spanish power that produced the great discoveries, he traces his path through Amsterdam, London, and finally the United States. Arrighi detected a first wave of financialization starting around 1560, when the Genoese businessman withdrew from commerce and specialized in finance, thereby establishing symbiotic relations with the Kingdom of Spain. The subsequent wave began around 1740, then the Dutch began to withdraw from commerce to become the bankers of Europe. The financialization in Great Britain which we will examine below, emerged around the end of the 19th century for the United States. It began in the 1970s. Put these dates together. I've talked about this, the Dutch and the British problem and their change and their loaning, and the United States starts from the Netherlands loan, remember, as a financialization. We started on the fall. We started from a fall as a nation. Pretty fascinating. Hegemony is, he defines, as, quote, the power of a state to exercise functions of leadership and governance over a system of sovereign states. Central to this concept is the idea that historically such governance has been linked to the transformation of how the system of relations among states functions in itself, and also that it consists of both what we would call geopolitical dominance, but also a sort of intellectual and moral leadership. The hegemonic power not only rises to the top in jockeying among states, but actually forges the system itself in its own interest. The key to this capacity for the expansion of this hegemon's own power is the ability to turn its national interests into international interests. The observers of the current American hegemony will recognize the transformation of the global system to suit American interests. The maintenance of the ideologically charged rules-based order, ostensibly for the benefit of everyone, fits neatly into the category of conflation of national and international interests. Meanwhile, the previous hegemon, the British, had their own version that incorporated both free trade policies and the matching ideology that emphasized the wealth of nations over national sovereignty. We hear the UN nation state and all that subversion as well in this, if you pay attention or understand this history. Some of you do, and keep track, because this is what this gentleman is talking about all right here. The corrosive nature of financialization is not immediately evident. In fact, quite the opposite. Harishi demonstrates how to turn the financialization, which is initially quite lucrative, can provide a temporary and illusory respite from the trajectory of decline, thus deferring the onset of the terminal crisis. Historically, Harishi observes that these breakdowns have been associated with escalations into outright warfare. Look into our future here, folks, right now. Specifically, the 30 Years' War in 1618 to 48, the Napoleonic Wars, 1803 to 15, and the two World Wars. Interestingly, and somewhat counterintuitively, these wars have typically not seen the incumbent hegemon and the challenger of opposing sides, with the Anglo-Dutch naval wars and a notable exception. Rather, it has typically been the action of other rivals that have hastened the arrival of the terminal crisis. But even in the case of the Dutch and British, conflict by coexistence with cooperation, as Dutch merchants increasingly directed their capital to London, where it generated better returns. The process of financialization emerging from the signal crisis was repeated with startling similarities in the case of Britain's successor, the U.S. The 1970s was a decade of deep crisis for the U.S. with high levels of inflation, a weakening dollar after the 1971 abandonment of gold, convertibility, and perhaps the most importantly, the loss of competitiveness of U.S. manufacturing. With rising powers such as Germany, Japan, and later China able to outcompete in terms of production, the U.S. reached the same tipping point and, like its predecessors, it turned to financialization. The 1970s was, in a word of historian Judith Stein, the pivotal decade that sealed a society-wide transition from industry to finance, factory floor to trading floor. As Harishi points out, financialization merely stalls the inevitable, and this has only been laid bare by subsequent events in the U.S. that detonated so spectacularly in 2008. Since then, the cascade of imbalances in the financial system has only accelerated, and it has only been through a combination of increasingly desperate financial ledger domains, inflating one bubble after another, and outright coercion that has allowed the U.S. to extend its hegemony even a bit longer beyond its time. In his late work, Harishi turned his attention to East Asia and surveyed the prospects for a transition to the next hegemony. While Harishi was not dogmatic on how the future would shape up and did not apply his theories deterministically, especially with regard to the developments of recent decades, he did speak forcefully about what in today's language could be called the necessity of accommodating a multipolar world. In the 1999 article, he and Silver predicted, quote, a more or less imminent fall of the West from the commanding heights of the world capitalist system is possible, even likely. Each hegemon at the end of its cycle of dominance experiences a final boom during which it pursues its national interest without regard from system-level problems that require system-level solutions. A more apt description of the current state of affairs cannot be formulated. The system-level problems are multiplying. The sclerotic ancient regime of Washington is not addressing them. By mistaking its financialization economy for a vigorous one, it overestimates the potency of weaponizing the financial system it controls. Thus again, by spring, where there is only autumn, this, as Araji predicts, will only hasten the end. So whether or not completely accurate, you knows them when you sees them here. The markers of the beast system appear to follow this historic path, hastening the end of that hegemon, folks. Not you, my dear listener, the historic hegemon system. So take note as you read this analysis, when you read it, read for the historic context, suggesting the U.S. could win the next war in its pining for, but lose the battle to keep itself the global hegemon, accelerating its demise, purposefully confusing flowering fraudulent financialization with production and productive capacity needed to be healthy. Look through the deceptions, folks. Position yourselves appropriately is what I've been advocating. Don't be caught standing on the tracks looking the other way when the train from nowhere arrives on schedule. Then when you reading the rest of the article, one might see we the people are not actually along for the ride if we choose not to be. Reading between the lines of the news notice offers a way back to the better path, abandoned, not abandoned, abandoned. The road less traveled, as it were, right, Gabriel? And speaking of abandoned, Biden administration cancels oil purchase for U.S. reserve as crude prices jump. Surging crude prices have forced the Biden administration to postpone a refilling of the U.S. oil reserve, with the Energy Department reportedly saying that Wednesday that it will not pursue a 3 million barrel purchase in, quote, taxpayers' interest, and analysts adding that the situation would likely continue. Given the current state of oil prices, the department indicated that it would adopt a wait-and-see stance on the refilling of the SPR, quote, which will continue to monitor market dynamics, the release added. And for what reason? We can read on here. Texas intermediate benchmark has risen gradually from the end of December, are up about 17% since the surge caused by a supply squeeze created by the Palestine-Israel conflict and output reductions by oil countries in the OPEC Plus group, which they did that on purpose. Has the Biden regime allowed the Zionistas to commit the genocide taxpayers are paying to kill UN relief workers like Zomi Frankum and the Chef Ali, who were feeding starving Semitic Palestinians? Hey, Zionist American taxpayer-funded genocide that has caused the shipping problems in the world, particularly oil? That kind of taxpayer consideration, folks? So, this is a self-inflicted wound. I've identified many. And it's a multi-domain planned attack against America, further insisting on starting what would be the elements of not world war, but an Armageddon, if we can read that far ahead, in particular with the Zionists now bombing an Iranian embassy in Syria at the same time, without a declared war, with the support or to no material objection of the Zio-Obama-run Biden regime, which appears to violate at least two international law conventions, the Geneva Convention and the Vienna Convention, of the law of treaties, called the Treaty of Treaties. Unprecedented acts of exceptional arrogance and contempt for mankind in an apparent attempt to hasten the chosen Messiah, the Antichrist, and by their command and in their time. Remember, this whole thing was called the Al-Aqsa Mosque attack. It is where the new temple needs to go. As we see, too, in relative to this price and not filling it up because it's just a taxpayer consideration. Well, the war in Israel doesn't. That's not even part of it. We'll just keep funneling more money. But we're not going to fill that strategic reserve. Oil price exceeds $90 per barrel in the biggest weekly rally since early February. Remember, when they could have bought the oil, it was down around $30 a gallon, folks. But the likelihood that continued restricted Russian product exports could further tighten U.S. petroleum supplies has suddenly forced a recalculation of the U.S. oil balances across the rest of the month and possibly beyond, analyst Jim Ritterbush said in a note issued earlier this week. To infirmity and beyond, folks. That's where we're going. Now that's your Bidenomics as we watch this thing go right over the edge. And with this sudden forced recalculation, the strategic oil reserve is not likely to be filled anytime soon in a nation looking to fight genocide or make war on just about everyone, all to benefit the tax slave. I mean, taxpayer, of course. Attacking everyone and blaming everyone else on someone else's dime sounds just like the decision made by the Zionist demons already belligerently occupying Palestine. And aren't those same demons overrepresented in the U.S. government and electoral processes? Yeah, in fact, one being the president himself, Joe, I'm a Zionist Biden. Is that mere coincidence or a plan? If anyone locates that power cord to the white and blue screen of death, would you mind just unplugging it, then slowly counting to 30, and then plugging it back in, please? Thank you so much. As I need to now let you know, after the hour, BTWRLM 571 is the episode. And you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. Don't expect someone else. You will have to protect yourself. As you can see and read the news, the notice tells you the future for you, wherever you might be, wherever you is. To infirmity or beyond, or the inexorable push beyond a fiat cash system, beyond mere debasement of currency, to the blockchained capture and servitude of people. Voluntary servitude, folks. They ended involuntary. They just get you to become a slave to whatever system they offer. And it's so convenient, and it's free, folks. SWIFT, SWIFT, completes the second phase of sandbox testing in its CBDC, interlinking more infrastructure for centralized control. The Society of Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, SWIFT, is very much so fully on board that the central bank digital currency, PUSH, is developing and testing an interoperable connector. It has just been announced that this work on some of the infrastructure necessary to make CBDCs a reality is progressing to the organization's satisfaction. Well, they plan for that. I don't know why this is a question. A SWIFT CBDC interlinking solution has undergone the second phase of testing and functionality of the connector in sandbox conditions and involving complex use cases, which is said to have been successful. This is the cat box cover-up in that sandbox, I'm sure. The simulated transactions, 750 of them, were carried out by 125 users, and among them are seven central banks and financial industry giants like Citibank, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, Shangri-La Commercial and Savings Bank. And tell me which one hasn't been found deep, eyeballs deep into corruption. But remember, we're in financial industry. Financialization is the end step before the hegemon fails. So put that other story in this one as you read that other story. We're talking about the news here that's happening right now, things that they said we don't have a clue about. There's risks. We can't do that yet. Just 2 years ago, it's happening. SWIFT is the first, started with beta tests in the fall of 2023, while the earliest trials began in March of that year referred to as breakthrough work on CBDC interoperability, and at the time involving three central banks, Hong Kong Monetary Authority, and the National Bank of Kazakhstan among them. March of 2023, they were still feigning fear and uncertainty in crypto and blockchain, if you remember. So we read on here, now the results are in. The selected four use cases cover digital trading, the atomic settlements, connecting tokenization platforms, demonstrating the connector's ability regarding current foreign exchange infrastructure, but utilizing CBDCs and liquidity-saving mechanism algorithms were also tested. And the token citizenship is just around the corner. Remember, this is the internationalization. But listen to the point about this, what they're doing in this. It's the interconnecting of those tokenized platforms. Remember, every big financier is going to have these platforms. Maybe, and not necessarily even the financiers, maybe X may have one as well. MasterCard may be having one as well. Listen to the list of things they're checking in and what this is all connected to. CBDCs and digital IDs worldwide, their plan is coming together. In a monumental step toward a digital future, the convocation of the 20th largest world economies, famously known as G20, has concluded upon a commitment to herald the advent of digital currencies and digital IDs across their territories. Global, folks. Happening. Amazing how fast this happened. Voices from across the globe have raised alarms. Just voices here. Howling voices. Alarms over the potential grooming in cryptocurrencies through government-aided regulation, which could subsequently lead to the replacement of these decentralized digital currencies with state-controlled central bank digital currencies that could override privacy and security attributes. At the New Delhi summit, important points deliberated included the technological public infrastructure, the digital economy, as well as crypto assets and cryptocurrencies of central banks. Gita Gopinath, first deputy manager director of International Monetary Fund, reinforced that the G20 gathering served as a platform to shape a global perspective of crypto assets. Now, that story I just read is from September of 2023. Despite the denials then, as the admissions are just coming out now, in March 2024, it is being implemented. Governance-driven misinformation and disinformation in this war against you. Look how fast this is coming on. The BRICS basket of currency is already on the move now. Of all places, in Zimbabwe launches gold currency to replace the dollar. Well, listen carefully. The move is expected to help reduce inflation, the governor of the Southern African Nation Center Bank has said. The structured currency, Zimb Gold, ZIG, will be anchored mainly on gold and foreign currency reserves. Zimbabwe's Reserve Bank Governor John Musha Yavandhu announced on Friday. With effect from today, banks shall convert the current Zimbabwe dollar balances to ZIG, Mushaya Vanyu said, adding that it will circulate with other currencies in the basket. The ZIG launch comes nearly a year after the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe defied the IMF warning and introduced a gold-backed digital currency for peer-to-business transactions. Last May, the RBZ announced the sale of gold-backed digital tokens worth approximately $40 million as part of an effort to stabilize the Zimbabwean dollar. So listen to this now. Let's apply that little notice. Zimbabweans are the first token citizens thinking they are free people. Don't you think that's ironic? Africans being digitally enslaved this time it's voluntarily secured by blockchains. Remember, involuntary servitude is outlawed, but voluntary servitude is quite fine. Now listen here, we read on. We listen to the risks inherent in digital token cyber citizenship currency of the panopticocratic plantation. the IMF has warned Harare that the issuance of such tokens comes with macroeconomic and financial stability risks, legal and operational risks, and governance risks that must be thoroughly evaluated. Let me read that again. Does your gold and silver coin admit to these risks? Tokens come from with macroeconomic and financial stability risks, legal and operational risks, and governance risks that must be thoroughly evaluated. Evaluated does not mean eliminated. And not even fiat cash suffers from these issues materially, or at least immediately. So you're being told the future here. Listen carefully. What to expect when living in the Siberian Gulag. Little paragraph right there tells you what they're dealing with, how vulnerable you are with those subject matters. And despite it being an open question what any fiat-driven government such as the United States is going to pay for that oil in the strategic reserve when they decide to help a taxpayer in a debt system. And I've said previously, Brandonizing or politicizing the dollar and Russia showing the way has the African nations throwing off the shackles imposed by Western plantation owners to say enough is enough of the foreign West opinions that keep going into their country and the obstructive controls. The success of conservation and the well thought out, not green, Greta vision, foreign retaliation, another elephant in the room. It's getting crowded. Literally, we read Botswana threatens to deport 20,000 elephants to Germany. The African nation president is outraged by the Berlin's move to ban the import of hunting trophies. Botswana's president, Mogetsi Masisi, has threatened to send 20,000 elephants to Germany in a diplomatic spat sparked by Berlin's proposed crackdown on imports on hunting trophies from Africa. Masisi told the German tabloid Bild on Tuesday that the move led by German Environmental Minister Steffi Lemke would only impoverish people in South African nation where the growing elephant population is destroying farmland. According to the president, herds have destroyed property, eaten crops, and trampled residents, including security officers. Botswana is a home of the world's largest population of elephants, with over 130,000 of the animals living in the territory, according to African Wildlife Foundation. President Masisi said that the expanding population is a result of decades of species protection and that hunting has helped to keep the numbers under control. Quote, "It's very easy to sit in Berlin and have an opinion on our affairs in Botswana. We pay the price for getting these animals for the world, and even for Lemke's party," the African leader said. Quote, "We would like to make such an offer to the Federal Republic of Germany. We don't accept no," President Masisi declared on Tuesday. Quote, "Accept this gift of 20,000 wild elephants from us. You should live with the animals as you try to dictate to us," he added, emphasizing, "this is not a joke." And I think I've passed on the anecdote a long while back, that the French agricultural aid agency shows up in Africa somewhere intending to solve a famine, attributing that famine to lazy people. In the spring, they get together and they get everybody to plant corn in the rich river of bottomlands. And they work hard all year to let it grow. Fall gets ready for the harvest as they move together. The workers aren't wanting to go down and they won't go into the fields to harvest. And just about that time, they're discussing about not going in the field. The French agricultural specialist says, "What's that?" And the answer from the people is, "That's the elephant migration. That's why we don't go to plant food and the elephants will eat." The do-gooders from the West, the do-gooders elsewhere, saying what some people should do for themselves without paying attention, without living there, is what African nations are saying enough is enough. And yet, you just heard me read, they are voluntarily going to enslave themselves by putting the shackles of the blockchain on them. Fascinating what people do. fascinating how people perceive the world. Now, that's probably guided by the West, but notwithstanding that the momentum is toward something that the financialization system said wasn't possible, and now we're already living it. So in Botswana, they have a problem, and the elephants are a big problem, and you heard that they'll trample your farmland and eat your food. The French anecdote and the German anecdote, you tell everybody what they're supposed to do in their land. Botswana's response is, here, you go live with these elephants for a while, you tell us what you come up with. Well, instead of invading a place to impose foreign little yellow bus excellence, maybe this next story will show the importance of living somewhere for a while to get a sense of what people there actually need. A recent interesting update inside allowing people to be more deftly grow food in elephant country comes along as we see living bee fences protect farmers from elephants and vice versa. A string of hives between posts can fend off pachyderms better than other deterrents, research shows. In the African bush in southern Kenya, Lucy King watched an elephant nicknamed Mohican rest under an acacia tree seemingly nonplussed by an overhead beehive. It was 2007, and King had just published a behavioral study confirming a belief widely held by indigenous communities for thousands of years that elephants are terrified of bees. Quote, I was completely thrown by this, King says, recalling the day that she sat watching the untroubled matriarch. I was like, no! Bees tend to sting elephants around the eyes, behind the ears, in the mouth, and even inside the trunk. Fortunately, observing Mohican on the hot day, King eventually realized what now seems obvious. For the bees to scare elephants, the insects must be swarming. King asked her research assistant to chuck a stone at the hive, and then suddenly the bees just erupted, King said, and the elephants just fled. Let me go and clarify. I believe that this may be a translational thing. They're not that dangerous at all when they're swarming. It's when they're defending the hive they are. And so in Africa, they do have killer beehives as well, killer bees as well. However, so I just wanted to clarify, the swarming is not nearly as dangerous. The bees are interested in swarming, not protecting the hive. They're actually leaving the hive, going somewhere to find a new place. But nonetheless, so the bees attack the elephants, and the elephants run like crazy. The aha moment led King to sketch a novel design for using live beehives and fences to protect farm crops from foraging elephants. The goal was to reduce human-elephant conflicts, which increased significantly in parts of Africa in the 2000s. Kenya has seen some recovery of its population of the pachyderms in recent decades, thanks to conservation efforts. Totally consistent with the Botswana guy says, what Germany doesn't understand. Quote, elephants are disturbing us a lot, Kenyan farmer told the researcher Sophia Weinman during an interview in her 2018 master thesis about the impact of the giant animals crop raids on farmers in Segala, Kenya. I planted about 6 kilos of green grams. They were all eaten. One time I just fainted in the field after waking up and seeing that happen. An elephant can eat a farm's entire harvest in one day, seriously threatening a family's income and food security, Weinman said. And I bet those French agriculturalists would say the same thing now. Hives are suspended from wires hanging between wooden posts. If an elephant tries to enter a farm, it walks into wires, shaking the hives and triggering the swarm, but it's just triggering the defense mechanism in the hive. Some 61% of the farmers interviewed by Weinman told her that the beehive fences are more effective than other deterrents, such as fashioning barriers out of thorn bushes, banging sheet metal, burning rubber tires to create acrid smoke, and shining light torches into the elephant's eyes. In a 2017 field study, King documented that bee fences installed at 10 farms near a national park in Kenya deterred elephants 80% of the time. Still, she knows that fences are not the final answer for human-elephant conflicts, given the scale of the problem in Africa. Also, foraging honey badgers and baboons occasionally feast on the honey and disturb the hives to the point that their occupants fly to safe locations. Meanwhile, bee fences have provided some farmers with new income. As part of the STE program, they are taught beekeeping and provided with protective gear such as suits, smokers, rubber boots, and gloves. And they're selling the honey at about $50 to $200 to a family's income added to that per harvest, really, which occurs about two times a year, is a huge, huge benefit to those families, said Esther Serum. The benefits go beyond extra income, she says. Quote, we have seen the decline in the numbers of gender-based violence cases as women are more empowered to have jobs, says Ndukchawa, who employs more than 1,500 female farmers. It might sound crazy, but a jar of honey saves elephants and feeds more families. Now, who'd have thunk it? Sweet idea. Yeah, well, maybe Botswana will send some of those beehive fence systems to Germany as well as with their 20,000 elephant gift offer, you think? They can find their herd to provide support for their non-existent green economy in Germany now. Sounds like a plan to me. Thanks, Botswana. Thanks for the suggestion. As I think on it, folks, you folks here up here in New North America, remember this story. I know you're not going to think about it, but remember this story. Why, you might ask? Think, go read. You may need it when the Greta's Conservation Biodiversity Assistance Units reintroduce the woolly mammoth clones that are right in the news today. Remember, elephants are not a joke, especially those in the room. And I wonder if these bee fence idea will work for the moose that's invading the high deserts coming in from the north. Very interesting migrations going on despite global warming. Yeah, cool story actually here. And I think the hives they use are actually called Kenyan-style hive. To actually put a name on those. They are in Kenya, but they are a Kenyan-style hive. They're a very neat little hive setup. Very simple to make and build as well. So, again, when the woolly mammoth starts to eat your crops, maybe you can consider a bee fence. And while all the honey that glistens is not gold, gold tops $2,300 after Powell reiterates the rate cut path this year. The financializations are in this Sovietized system already. Powell said the Fed has a time to assess data before deciding the cut, while silver rises to the highest intraday level since July of 2021. And that may or may not be a sleeper relative to it's being suppressed right now. Gold has now been the pricing has been taken from the West, and it's now moving to Asia, who's setting the better price at this point. Gold rose to another record, extending a weeks-long rally after Fed Reserve Chairman Jerome, we don't know what the heck we're doing, Magic 8-Ball Powell, reiterated that it was likely to be appropriate to begin lowering interest rates at some point this year. Powell said recent inflation figures, though higher than expected, didn't materially change the overall picture, according to the Wednesday speech at California Stanford University. He signaled policymakers will wait for clearer signs from their magic eight ball of lower inflation before cutting interest rates. Lower rates are generally positive for gold since it pays no interest. Silver, on the same time, climbed the 4%, close to $27 an ounce. Again, highest since 2021, as this economy, the financialization hegemon, may be seeing the end of its life. It's not adjusting. So we understand that. There's an adjustment that could be made. As we read here, as we are reminded, that Russia is reaping the benefits of storing gold, as I told you they started to do over a decade ago. The purposeful creation of significant reserves in precious metals means that the country does not spend a large amount of money on its development, but is salting it away. Quite often, governments do this when they see growing geopolitical risks, the expert says. As I told you to watch a sovereign, Russia was looking into the future at geopolitical risk and started to move into gold already, long before, even though they're going to bring on that token Siberian gulag onto their own people in their own digital token citizenship. As they advance that as well. Why? Taxes. They get more revenue and they get more control than any government needs. According to the Freedom Finance Global Analyst Vladimir Chernov, the possible introduction of the precious metals-backed single currency by the BRICS countries could be another reason behind Russian stockpiling gold reserves. It is, but it's not. You see, Zimbabwe is already enslaving their own people. They don't need that much gold because it's in the basket. These are little bitty nuggets at the bottom of a basket of fiat currency. So let's not, it's happening. Let's just not get persuaded that that's the answer. As I said, parity, folks. They're bringing all the nations into a financialized finality. And those that have ability to produce, like you're watching Russia do that now. We're going to see how much and where it goes. Are going to seem, it seems like, I can't see how they aren't going to do better. They'll be able to at least provide for themselves. More about the stores of golden waves of grain, exceptional Russian harvest lowers global wheat prices. So you see a country that may be going down, their farmers aren't going to get as much, money for their grain. They're not going to be as much money when their prices are going up, but Russia could just dump this stuff on the market and do quite well for itself. Why? Because it's salting away gold to back its whole finance, its whole economy, is bolstered by something recognized as a store of value. Wheat prices have declined to a 3-year low due to an exceptionally strong yield in Russia, which is helping to fill the export gap left by the shortfall from Ukraine. But sanctions, folks, just what happened to those? Bidenomics. And if we think the fiat system collapse wasn't foreseen, this next story, remember I talked about September 2023, this is from November 2023, as we could read, if we did read, Dutch Central Bank admits it has prepared for a new gold standard. How to prepare for a gold standard. It's a little report here you might want to take a look at. What they've been doing all this time since. Well, they denied the crypto, denied all that, denied that there was a problem. Throw sanctions on Russia that didn't affect it one little bit. In fact, it bolstered it, really tightened it up, really made it have to look real hard at what it was doing and provide for itself. As I said, try to do that for yourself. But here in this story, in the recent, again, Netherlands, Dutch, why is that a central figure for this? I don't know, but here we are. In a recent interview with Dutch Central Bank shares, it has equalized its gold reserves relative to GDP to other countries in the Eurozone and outside. There's parity right there talking about it. Of Europe. This has been a political decision. The economy is politics, folks. So I said, when you go after Russia, the sanctions, you lost the war right there. You lost, period. Spitting into the hurricane. If there is a financial crisis, the gold price will skyrocket. This is written in 2023 now. Look what's gone on. Talk about a step jump. Gold just did it. And I've been looking to see where that the level is in that in this next step. That instead of went 200, it went 300. And, anyway, yeah, I should say, if you know anybody want a gold mine, I have to sell the one I have. I appreciate someone contacting me. If you have someone who's qualifying that could buy it, it's about 100 acres of the placer deposit. Validity, it's a United States federal government valid, checked out and certified that there is gold there. I need to move on from it. Things have changed and I'm in a bad way that needs to be solved. So if you know anybody, please I just need a network of people that will find the one that will pick it up. That would be helpful. But here we have, now the price is jumping. I would have been really, if things would have worked out the way I had thought, we would be sitting pretty right now. But see, that's not my lot in life, I suppose. It's reading to you the price of gold going up and trying to get everyone positioned where they need to be. But these people are planning for a new gold standard. Whether or not it's a gold standard for you ends up being, what do you do for a store of value that you can trade amongst people? And it seems to me the history tells us gold and silver coin would be a good place to start. It doesn't have a lot of hangups. It certainly isn't a blockchain, your wrists to some third-party financialization hegemon that's dying as well. How would you like to be chained to a dying animal? If there is a financial crisis, the gold price will skyrocket and official gold reserves can be used to underpin a new gold standard, according to DNB. The statement confirmed what I've been writing, this author writes, for the past years about central banks having prepared for the new international gold standard. How to prepare for the gold standard? Wouldn't a central bank that has one primary objective, maintaining price stability, serve its mandate best by communicating the currency issues can be relied upon in all circumstances? By saying gold will be the safe haven of choice during financial collapse, DNB confesses its own currency, the euro, does not weather all storms. Indirectly, DNB encourages people to own gold to be protected from financial shocks, making the transition toward a gold-based monetary system more likely. When you see this word financial, just talk about financialization, the end of a hegemon that's actually falsely promoting that it's doing well. It's not. Evenly spread gold reserves internationally are a prerequisite for a smooth transition to a gold standard. In some countries, own too much or others too little, as was the case in the 1970s. A newly implemented gold standard would prove to be deflationary because the ones with too little gold would have to buy in, pushing up the real price of gold. And as long as official gold reserves are evenly spread, the nominal price could be increased to what is suited for all countries introducing the new system. Again, this parity thing. The SDR, Special Drawing Rights, basket of currency with a nugget of gold to give it weight, and all these countries having parity to that is, I think, what they're talking about. As we see the central banks buying gold at this point and the price starting to go way up, it's telling you that the global economy is going down. It's not doing very well at all. Last but not least, European central banks' communication about gold has become unequivocally clear and candid, stating gold is the bedrock of stability for the international monetary system. That's from Germany. Gold is an excellent hedge against adversity, stated from Italy. Gold is considered to be the ultimate store of value, as stated from people in France. And gold may play a stabilizing role in times of structural change. They're using structured currency to do this. Structural change in the international financial system or deep geopolitical crisis, as stated from Hungary. Remarkable statements from entities tasked with guaranteeing financial stability. But remember, just financialization is the definition of a declining hegemon. It's in the last throes of its existence. Fiat systems praising the virtue of gold through abandon that the people allowed them to abandon is what we're talking about here. Fascinating. It's amazing what they're now admitting to and what they're now moving to. Something else amazing, or at least confirmational. New research shows pregnancy can alter the structure of one's brain. Scientists once linked maternal behavior to hormones released during birth, but new research shows those changes take place during pregnancy as well. I've got to say, like I said, it's more confirmational. People, women that get pregnant, their whole being changes, and it's in preparation for this life, and then bringing this life, and then into the future. And we're going to see that little bit of study here that explains this. New research conducted at the Francis Crick Institute in the United Kingdom is changing scientists' understanding of the hormonal and emotional changes that take place during motherhood. And let me, I guess, interject here. Trust the science. No, this is an example of why you don't trust science. It's learning all the time to our benefit, but it's the learning that goes on. It doesn't have an answer. It has the next best guess. And to that point, I'm supportive of it. To make saying science is your definition of how you lead your life, not so much. Going on here, our research shows that such preparations are taking place in the brain, too. Researchers found the changes in the brain helped alter maternal behavior as well as creating increased plasticity, allowing mothers to more effectively learn through trial and error. You almost see that early man didn't quite know. It's built into the creation of that to learn from trial and error. And I guess that's the survival of the fittest. How do you quickly learn from trial and error without killing your baby? Pretty interesting fortification of who we can be, who we are, what we have to pull from. What is it, what we abandon when we hand it all to someone else, some expert out there. The study adds to a growing body of research on the biological changes that take place during parenthood for both mother and fathers. Research last year found fathers also developed increased, quote, experience-induced brain plasticity, close quote, in the process of caring for an infant. So my thought on that was, do you think this is another reason why they want to destroy the family? Men and women lose this capacity in them, and it's one of capability. It's one of future. And so there's a, you start looking at what government is set up to do, do the exactions of every kind, create inhumane for punishment prison systems. They don't want people to be self-reliant. They don't want them to be protective. They want them to be victims. And the system grew up, has grown up to create that and to deny us these things that so-called science is just now coming onto, that I'm sure every mother and father already know. Why are we allowing this to be done? Why are we handing over? Again, going back to Zimbabwe, why are those people allowing themselves to be turned into digital slaves voluntarily? Why did this nation of the United States allow involuntary servitude to be outlawed except is the very oversight that we've missed as a people globally in about every condition that, again, I thought the great Kobe swindle would allow us as a society to see. So very interesting things. They also say that there's evidence in fathers that do longer care for the infants. They grow these capabilities even more, even though you see videos where fathers have this instinct about danger in their kids. They're moving before the danger happens. They're already moving to stop that. And that's always kind of intrigued me as well. So I hope something I said today helps you, that you can see what's going on. I really hope this Assange thing, lots of view goes on to that Assange problem. They're just speaking to the inhumanity of our own prison system, the thing that everyone thinks is a freedom, the thing that you think is justice. It's just us. It's made to exploit people on a commercial level. And we're not seeing any reflection of that in a system that agrees, that admits that it is an inhumane, and it is continuing. Understand that that reflects back into every aspect of our society today. And this is the weakness of the American system, that they preyed upon our apathy. And what we ought to have been able to resolve ourselves to be peaceful on our land and produce, that you heard the nations need, and yet we can't, and they keep that as under attack, and they steal that from us, and it shows evidence that this is not what the place they want, and the financiers, the money people, are figuring out ways to profit from our work. And likely the fact that they tear down our families, we don't get the experience that we need on being self-protective of our families than ourselves. We don't gain new tech, the capacities, maybe parts of the things building to that, to allow that problem. But I'll be with you next week, Tech Tips, for nature willing. This is BTW RLM 571.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
A can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.